In Dianetics, we have what is called a magic triangle, only we don't call it a magic triangle. It's just called ARC, ARC. Good name for it. We find out that the item known as life energy and the item known as physical universe energy are not the same. They have some parallelisms, otherwise they would not be able to unite. They have a vibrational level in common, otherwise they would not be able to unite and react with each other. But electricity, that stream of electronic impulses surrounded by a magnetic field, which takes place because there is a magnetic field, or takes place because there are impulses, or takes place for some other reason. And what we call in Dianetics theta are energies of an entirely different kind. In order to emphasize this, we make it fairly plain that we are not talking about a physical universe energy by saying we consider theta to be exterior to the physical universe. Actually, it seems to have its own codes, its own behavior, its own wavelengths, and even its own time. Its time, theta time, and theta universe time are not physical universe time. The times are different. There is such a thing as theta matter. Theta matter would be an idea. If you don't think there is such a thing as theta matter, just think for a moment of the culture of a nation. That culture is actually thought and ideas which have become solidified into patterns. You can even plot whether or not a thing is still a fluid idea or a fixed idea. All that's very nebulous. One of these fine days, we'll know a lot more about it. We didn't make any real advance, however, in the study of aberration, human mind, and behavior until we recognized that there was such a thing. Now, although it was not described, since it was mainly talked about by people who did not know how to use or treat or describe energy as energy, this item, theta, has been talked about, discussed, and taken for granted for some thousands of years. It is woven in and out of philosophy to such a degree that hardly any book of philosophy does not mention somewhere or other the energy of life, and then runs away very happily and plays skipjack or beanbag. That doesn't have anything more to do with this. The most adventurous fellow in the past century or so on this subject was Bergson, and he called it Elan Vital. He gave it a label, and then he hastily went off and left it. Now, if you look at it engineering-wise, you'll see that an energy has to have vibrational rates, that it can form into wave patterns which are either that have tone, volume, quality. In other words, it has all the requisites of an energy. It can be described to some degree. The second we began to describe it that way in Dianetics, we began to get much better results. Things began to happen. Things we couldn't understand before were understood better. We know quite a bit about it, actually. The energy of life. Life unites with the physical universe in such a way as to form an organism. And an organism is part physical universe and part theta. It's motivated by theta. Theta, you can consider it such, has an energy value. It has three component parts. Three component parts. One is affinity, one is reality, and one is communication. So that we have a triangle. A-R-C. Those are three parts of theta. They are interdependent to such a degree that if you interrupt any one of them, you will interrupt the flow of the other two. Theta is flowing as ARC, affinity. Now, it's obvious there is such a thing as affinity. You can call it, you call it love. But that's hardly descriptive enough. Affinity is the sympathetic coexistence of two things or an energy, two parts of the same energy or something of the sort. When we took this tuning fork in the physical universe and we said bong on this tuning fork and it started vibrating at 512, this other tuning fork that hadn't been touched, it says bong too. You damp this one out, you find out this tuning fork is ringing. You set these two tuning forks up again, you hit this one, damp it, you find out this one is ringing. They're on the same level. Therefore, you could say they have sympathetic vibration. Actually, if you were dealing with theta, you would say they had affinity. They were similar. They were parts of the same, and so on. Two men talking with each other either are in affinity with each other or they aren't. If they're not, they'll argue. If they are in affinity with each other, two other things have to be there. They have to have agreed upon a reality, and they have to be able to communicate that reality to each other. So, when you speak of reality, physical universe reality, it's a very interesting thing. I'm telling you in an earlier lecture, there is no really such thing as the physical universe. There is a motion, but we sense something. We see something with our eyes. We hear something with our ears. We smell something with the nose. We touch something with the hands. We decide then that there is something. But the only way we know it is through our senses. And those senses are artificial channels. We are not in direct contact with the physical universe. We are through contact through our sense channels with the physical universe. You blunt those sense channels. A man loses his eyesight. As far as he's concerned, there is no light or shape or color or depth perception to the physical universe. It has a reality still to him, but it is not the same reality as another person's. In other words, he is unable to conceive a physical universe suddenly and completely without sight. He can't conceive these things without senses. So the physical universe is seen through these senses. Now, you and I take a look at this and we see a table. And we agree this is a table. It is made out of wood. It is brown. We agree that. Of course, you understand that when I say brown and you hear brown, brown actually to you may be purple. But you have agreed that it is brown because all your life people have been pointing to this color vibration and they've been saying brown. It might be really red to me, but I recognize it as brown. So we are in agreement, although we might be seeing something different. But we agree this is brown, this is wood, this is table. Fellow walks in the door, he comes up and he takes a look at this thing and he says, huh, an elephant. You say it's a table, see? Elephants are... one. Ah, no, elephant. So we say he's crazy. He doesn't agree with us. Do we attempt further to communicate with him? No. He doesn't agree with us. He hasn't agreed upon this reality. Are we in affinity with him? No. We say, go downstairs and call the little men in the white coats. This guy's crazy. We don't like him. We don't want to be around him. Now, you and I are, let's say, are arguing. And this table is made out of wood, and it's brown. And you say, table's made out of wood. And I say, no, it's not. It's made out of metal, which is painted to look like wood. And we start arguing about this. Arguing. We're trying to reach a point of agreement. We can't reach this point of agreement. Another fellow comes up here and he takes a look at the table and he says, well, as a matter of fact, the legs are painted to look like metal, but the top is wood, and it is brown, and it is table. You and I reach an agreement. We feel an affinity. All of a sudden, we feel friendly. We feel friendly toward him. He solved the problem. We have reached an agreement, and we go into communication. How do we go into communication with each other now? There is a theta-level operation of some sort or other. There's too much data, too badly evaluated. A lot of it is bogus data. A lot of it is nonsense about life energy. But a lot of it may have some truth in it. But nobody's ever gotten into that bin of knowledge and really scrambled around and held up this item and that item and gotten the most important items together and formulated and organized them. There's spiritualism, clairvoyance, clairaudience, ESP, and so on and so on. There's all sorts of manifestations. There's faith healing. This thing just works in... There's this tremendous quantity of disrelated, discoordinated, most of it discredited data about this, but it's a funny thing that man keeps on talking about it and has been talking about it evidently for 50,000 years. That bin is really active as a bin of knowledge. Nobody's ever got it lined up, but... it's very active. Rhine, out at Durham, has awful arguments with fellows up here at San Francisco. They write letters back and forth all the time. Neither one of them knows a darn thing about what they're talking about, but boy, are they having a hard time trying to reach an agreement on what they don't know. The amount of dissension in the field of religion, for instance, should demonstrate to you that it is a level of abstraction about which very little agreement can be reached. Therefore, there's very little affinity in brotherly love sometimes. And when it comes to an agreement, we can obtain agreement on the physical universe. Here, for instance, is Mr. A, and here is Mr. B, and here's the physical universe. And Mr. A and Mr. B might possibly have a communication channel through the theta level. There's some indications that that exists. Not very positively identifiable. But where their main communication channel is to here, and from here, to here. A has an idea. He puts the idea on the sensory switchboard, goes over on the motor switchboard, the vocal cords operate, put air into vibration. Go over, they reach the eardrum, put it into vibration, hits the motor switchboard, hits the sensory switchboard, and goes in on the other fellow. Now, if he's used words on which, if there's been an earlier agreement on what the physical universe was, because there might have been a disagreement on that, one might have been from North Carolina and the other might have been from Nebraska, and if there's been an earlier agreement, they can get into agreement, but they're getting into agreement via the physical universe. When A says, up, he says, up, that sense message goes through that channel, strikes the other, B, but A had an idea of an elevator moving when he said, up, and B receives the idea. And he's got the idea of a rocket going up, different velocities up. And they can get into an argument. The fellow says, I think it ought to go up. And the other fellow sees a rocket going, and that would be much too fast to send this item up. So he says, no. And the first guy says, well, elevator is nice and slow. He's saying to himself, it could go up. And the other fellow says, no. Now they argue for a while, and then they finally get to a point where B realizes that the other one is talking about an escalator. See, he can see this escalator motion. He gets the idea of up. In other words, the word up means different things to them, but they get those things enough into approximation, they get agreement, they've got a reality, then they stop lambasting each other and saying, no, you don't mean up, you mean up. And the other fellow says, I mean up, of course I mean up, but you don't mean up, I mean up. And so on, yak. And their affinity's down. First thing you know, they'll square up. And their communication lines are pretty jagged. But the second they reach this agreement, why, they say, well, of course I said up, and you know it's up too, and you're a good fellow, and I'd like to go off and have a beer with you, and everything is fine. I love you dearly. We're in communication. I want to tell you about my why. They've got an agreement. ARC. In order for there to be communication, there must be agreement and affinity. In order for there to be affinity, there must be agreement on reality and communication. In order for there to be reality and agreement, there must be affinity and communication. 1, 2, 3. Knock this out, these go. If you knock this out, these will go. If you knock this out, they'll all go. This is life. Life energy. If you take a man and thoroughly disagree with him, go out of communication with him, and withdraw all affinity from him, from his fellow human being, he'd die. Boom. You could actually disagree with a man to an extent where he would die. You disagree with him, but there are 5 ways to block a communication line. I won't go into all those 5. One of them is to cut it. Another one is to make it so painful that the person that's receiving it will cut it. Another one is to put so much on it that it jams. I'll leave you those 3. Now, when it comes to your communication, then you could make it painful. Or you could refuse it. Or you can put so much on it that he cuts it off. Those are 3 very important things to know about a communication line. That communication must be good communication. The necessary data sent in the necessary direction received. All that communication will be about, by the way, is reality and affinity. The physical universe. Reality and affinity concerning the physical universe. The discussions and so forth will be whether there is affinity or isn't affinity, or whether there is or it's not agreement, and where the agreement is particularly disagreed with. On the physical universe. As far as affinity is concerned, took a bunch of babies in Boston, 40 of them. Took 20 of those babies and they sent them home after they were born. They all got along fine. They just took them at random. 20 more babies they left in the hospital and nobody went near them except to feed them. The 20 babies that remained got ill. No affinity. No affinity. Now, affinity can be built up in a number of ways. You can talk to people and build up an affinity with them. But remember, we're talking about communication, not just talk. There are many, many ways to communicate. 2 people can sit and look at each other and be in communication. One of the nicest ways to go into communication is tactile. You can pet a cat. And the cat all of a sudden starts to purr. You're in communication with the cat. You reach out and shake a guy's hand. Present time. You reach out and shake a guy's hand. You're in communication with him because tactile has taken place.
Or the old boys with the... with the tooth and claw idea that everybody hates everybody, really, and everybody's on the defensive, and that's why we have to force everybody into being social animals. You know, the old school.
They said the reason men shake hands is to show there is no weapon in the hand. Nah. Communication. In France and so forth, they throw their arms around each other. They do it in Spain. They do it in Italy. So on. There's lots of contact. Contact. That contact is communication. If a person is badly out of communication and you touch him, he considers all things painful. If you reach out and pat him on the shoulder and he dodges slightly, even though he doesn't go on, you'll find he's also out of communication vocally. You try to say something to him. You say, you know, I think that's a pretty good project, Project 342A, and I think we ought to go along with it. He'll sit there and he'll look at you. And you go down, you complete Project 36. And you say, Project 36 has been just thrown out. We weren't going to go through with that at all. He hardly knows you're talking to him. He dodges everything you say. Or he may talk to you so hard and so long, you won't get a chance to tell him you want to do Project 336A. That's dodging you, too. In other words, he's out of communication with you. Therefore, his affinity is low, and he won't agree with you either. But if you can get him into agreement, this will pick up, and this will pick up. This is about the most important dope I've ever run across on the field of interpersonal relations, control, and management. Supervisory techniques which do not have this as a precise working axiom are apt to fail, as often as they do fail right now. A group of men, here's this group of men in a room. You go in, you talk to them. Agreement. Trying to reach agreement with them. Those men are pretty spooky and pretty low on the tone scale. I tell you, you can advance the most beautiful, the most wonderful reasons under the sun, and they will still remain antagonistic towards you. Are you communicating with them? That's it. A low-tone individual doesn't take a high-tone communication. And I'll show you a little bit more about that in a moment. If you're not communicating with them, they're not agreeing with you, and you haven't any affinity with them. They're not going to agree or do what you say. They're going to kick back at you one way or the other. There are ways to get in communication with that group. You can go around, you can take any group of workmen, any group of men working on a similar project. You can take one look at the foreman and the men. You can tell whether or not these people are in communication with one another. If they aren't, they are not working as a coordinated team. They're not in communication, perhaps, because they're not agreed on what they're doing. All you've got to do is take the group, put them together, and say, what are you guys doing? You don't ask the foreman. You ask the whole group and the foreman, what are you guys doing? Well, one fellow says, I'm earning $40 a week. That's what I'm doing. Another one says, well, I'm glad to get out of the house every day. The old woman's pretty pestiferous. Another one says, well, as a matter of fact, I occasionally get to drive the truck over there, and I like to drive the truck, and I'll put up with the rest of this stuff. I got to work anyway. Another guy will say, if he were being honest, maybe, I'm staying on this job because I hate this dog that you've got here as a foreman. If I devote my life to making him miserable, boy, that makes me happy. I really lead him a dog's life, too. All the time you thought those men thought that they were grading a road. Not one of them thought they were grading a road. You thought that they were building a road between Augusta and Wichita, and they weren't. Not one of them was building a road. Not one of them was even grading. You get them together and it's crew maybe and unhappy and inefficient and so forth, and you say, well, you know, someday there's going to be a lot of cars go over this road. Maybe they'll wreck themselves occasionally and so forth, but a lot of cars will go over this road. You boys are building a road. You're building a road from Augusta to Wichita. From Wichita to Augusta. Pretty hard job. But somebody's got to do it. A lot of people thank you, boys, for having built this room. I know you don't care anything about that, but that's really what we're doing around here. Now, I'd like a few suggestions from you people how we could build this road a little bit better. All of a sudden, the whole crew is building a road. R to A, they go up, so forth. If you've got a foreman on the job, it's around 3035, something like that, and who's still got some theta volume, knows his job, knows what he's doing, you ought to have to tell that crew, they'll be building a road, the whole crew. But the crew, as dispersed as that, probably had a 1-1 or a 1-5 foreman. You get them to agree on what they're doing, they're all set. You know, communism has a number of instinctive tactics, being kind of instinctive anyway. And one of those is built sort of empirically upon the fact that a bunch of Swedes went down into Russia and whooped them about 900 and put a czar in. Actually, the Swedes went down there as mercenaries and worked for all the petty princes and these petty principalities. And one day, the Swedes, they'd been driven out of their own country by a revolution. The Swedes formed the bodyguards of all the princes that formed all of Russia. And one day, all the bodyguards revolted and chopped off all the heads of the Russian nobility and took over Russia and elected a czar and unified the Russias. And the Tsar, after he'd been reigning for a year or two, took a Russian name. They became White Russians. World War I, 1917, they stood that lineal descendant up, and they shot him dead. They had lived all those centuries with an alien race in control, and they resented it. And that alien race was capital, aristocracy. Now they're trying to sell the whole cockeyed world the idea that they're being governed by an alien race. You couldn't possibly pound it with a hammer, a sickle, or a sledgehammer into the skull of a Russian that the capitalists of America were of the same race as the laboring class of America. You couldn't convince them that they're all Americans and they were all born with more or less the same chance and they could all get there. You couldn't convince them of this. No, there are white Swedes, we know. Sure, and you got to kill them. That's the only way you can do it. Well, this great philosophy that gets imported into this country via the sewers or something, I don't like the communists. I thought I might as well add that. These boys work inside the unions, and they've kept telling the unions now for decades. Unionism's okay, but they keep telling these unions, you know, you're really being governed by a bunch of white Russians, a bunch of Swedes or something, and they're a different breed of cat. They're different people. They're not your people. They're not like you. You're laboring men. The thing to have is sweat. That's the stuff. Sweat. That's what we mean. And those guys with those brains, you don't want to have anything to do with them because they belong to another race. And now management tries to come in and they have been told, labor has been educated into believing that the whole of management, the whole of capital, is made up out of a different kind of individual. So the similarity or affinity cannot exist. So there can't be an agreement on reality. And there can't be a communication. Now, about the first thing you could do with people in interpersonal relations with labor is set up every possible communication line you can to labor. Let them find out, if you possibly can, that they aren't being run by white Russians. You'll get some sort of an agreement. If you agree they're men, they're liable to agree that you're a man, too. They resent being owned very much because theta only functions when it is self-determined. Got to have self-determinism in a man or in a group. This does not mean socialism. You try to turn management over to a group, that's really a laugh. You turn over to a group of guys that have no concept of management or executive lines, and can they pray and beg? I had this happen once. I threw a whole operation at the staff. There you are. One of them got up a few days later and said, I have a motion to put on the floor. Mr. Hubbard, please take charge of this operation. They hadn't known it was that complex. All of a sudden, we'd gotten agreement. So they said, gee, that's a specialized operation. That's a specialized operation, and he's human, we're human, we're in communication. He's been talking to us. We do have some affinity, and he does want these things to happen for our own good and so on. We had interpersonal relations. All of a sudden, we had management-labor relations, too, like of which we've never had before. By the way, this doesn't mean collectivism. It just meant simply letting the boys get together once in a while. Having management interested in getting labor together as individuals is quite an innovation. The union can only exist as a union as long as it has affinity, communication, and reality between the union leader and the union member. Psychological warfare consists of cutting a communication line or demonstrating a difference exists where they thought reality existed, where they thought they had agreement. Union leadership has supplanted management in the affections of labor. And union leadership does not constitute the working brain force and regulating force which is going to keep labor working. What can you expect but a failure of an economic system that is being run so cocky? Similarly and simultaneously, how do you expect a human being to operate when he doesn't have agreement within himself? The liver does not agree that the pancreas are doing a good job. The communication line between the right hand and the right ear are cut. Not because the nerves are severed, because there's a jam switchboard. The communication between eye and the right foot goes haywire every once in a while. Guy has a toe that occasionally twitches, and eye says, stop it! And it goes on twitching. In other words, unless there's an affinity throughout the body and its various parts, it doesn't get along well. Unless there's good communication, in other words, good nerve channels, smooth switching connections, and so forth throughout the nervous system, you don't have communication that's any good. And unless the whole body is agreed on what it's supposed to do, you don't get along well either. This fellow agrees that the best thing to do is to sit there at that desk and work like the mischief and make lots of coffee and cakes, only the back doesn't agree with this. The back says, I'm tired. All of a sudden, you get out of communication. How does this apply to the tone scale? It's not very technical. You talk about theta. You can imagine a free-flowing, smooth-flowing energy that's just doing fine. It's got three component parts, affinity, communication, and reality. These three parts, when flowing smoothly in conjunction with each other, produce a nice, harmonious unition with MEST, the physical universe. The body, that is the physical universe, and theta just go along fine. As a matter of fact, theta, running nice and smoothly, will lay out over items and people in the physical universe, and things will just run like a clock. But the second it starts down, here's this commodity here. The second it starts separating, damping out, the second affinity, communication, reality start damping out, you start to get disharmony. Dissonance, as in a musical note. The second you start to get dissonance, here is the way life kicks itself out of an organism which is dying. Here's two. Let's say that this can exist fairly well down to two. It's pretty bad when it gets here. But from here on down in anger, it's nice and jagged. And then in fear, it's further apart, it's separating. And when you get down to here, apathy and death, it is null. Affinity, communication, reality are not interacting at all. They are not functioning at all. How out of communication can an individual get? Dead. If you ever try to communicate with a dead man, you agree with me. Now, here's your tone scale again. Only here is the actually, technically, the engineering derivation extrapolation of that tone scale. There's where it came from. It's the recognition of a no vibration. And death being the same thing, the recognition that the halfway point would be a half cancellation. And up here. Here, they're still fighting exteriorly to try to stay together. Here, they're afraid they won't. Here, at grief, they know they don't. Here, at apathy, it's gone. And then it's dead. Theta has those three component parts, and you have ARC. It's very important to know that. Very important to know that because it tells you immediately what we're talking about when we have a communication line on this chart, and it says he's out of communication. Here is the extrapolation, by the way, and this is the basic extrapolation of this chart. Here we have a 1-5. What will he do with communication? He'll turn it straight around. You tell him black, he'll say white. Even though it serves his purpose, you might think to say black, he'll say white. He doesn't look angry, unless you know the tone scale. And you tell him, say, by the way, would you go over to the other end of the shop in black and tell George black, and you see him go, but he tells George white. If you told him to tell George white, he would tell George black. Agreement can be procured anywhere on this scale at the level of the scale. In other words, you can enter the vibration level. Talk to an angry man angrily. If you don't attack him, if you appear to be agreeing with him on the subject and agreeing with him angrily, you're in affinity with him and you'll be in communication with him, but you won't be in communication with him anyplace else on the scale. It's pretty easy to go into communication with people high up the scale. If you've got a stenographer that's at 0.5, you give her a letter, you say, Wilkes Brothers, we have your order instant. Shipment was received, couldn't one, yours truly. 0.5. Darn thing is all nulled out here. First place, she really doesn't agree with you that you ought to be writing that letter. Just because you want it written. The letter will probably read, Dear Mr. Thompson, your order of the 16th instance has been received and everything was broken in it. You ask her, would you please go down to the traffic court and fix up this ticket for me? You don't think about it again. Boy, if you've got a 0.5 in a stenography chair, you certainly better think about it again. Because you don't get action at this point. You see how far down the scale it is from the standpoint of life. Life has damped out at that point. So you don't get persistence, you don't get action, you don't get responsibility, you don't get motion, movement. And you say, here's this, here's that, do something else, do something else, do something else. You don't get them done. There's where your tone scale becomes very, very important. Here is ARC at work. Affinity. Let's say you have somebody that you're working with and really this person's at 1-1. This person appears to have affinity for you. He says he likes you. He says he likes you quite often. As a matter of fact, this is very propitiative. It's a level. He likes you a great deal. And you wonder why you keep getting unhappy around him. After all, everything he says is for your own good. You get very, very unhappy, and then you say, well, the poor fellow, he's trying his best. He's trying to kill you. I mean, just as simple as that. May take him 5 years, but he'll do it. He works along at that level. In other words, he's working below this 2-0 line, and he'll keep swinging these covert activities at you. And don't think he won't introduce a covert activity in the business. He will demonstrate an affinity. He'll say he has an affinity, but his agreement is very poor. Very poor. He will take everything that's good news and make it kind of shabby. He'll go into communication only along the line of gossip. You come in at 8 o'clock in the morning and sit down at your office desk and you're just doing fine. You think you had a game of golf that morning. Kind of tired, but you sure enjoyed that game of golf. And, you know, confidentially, the boss came in 8 o'clock this morning. He hadn't... He looked pretty tired. He wasn't wearing his regular business clothes either. And this gets back to the wife going through the hands of 1-1s, 1-1, going through another 1-1, getting chain reactions, so forth. You know, Mamie, I really hate to tell you this, but I'm telling you this for your own good, but you know, George was out all night the other night. I thought you ought to know. There is a stenographer down at the plant, you know. Yeah, because they'll only carry that line. Wonderful. It's just wonderful. The news, which will go through one of these low-level communication lines, is a certain brand of news. And a 1-5 communication line carries destruction, because that's what it is, and that's all it'll vibrate to. A 1-1 communication line will carry gossip, covert hostility, propitiation. Gee, that's a very, very pretty dress you got on, Marge. I always have liked it. Now, you get along about 0-5. You get 0-5, and the only thing that will go through there is hopelessness. And if you try to give 0-5s much that isn't hopeless, they'll pass along hopelessness. You just do fine. You can explain to a 0-5, now look, everything's going to be all right, and the whole operation's going to succeed, and we've just got in some new capital, and everything is just fine, and we're all working hard on it now. And I want you to pitch in and do your best, and you will, won't you? Oh, yes. You come back past the desk a moment ago, and a moment later, and you got your ear cocked. And he was just telling me that we were almost ready to collapse. He said they do bond issue. They would try, but you know, I don't think it'll go through. I could tell by listening to him. Boy, all of a sudden, why? This is interesting. This is kicking life to pieces when it gets down below two, and it starts kicking the individual to pieces below two because he's not in communication. He does not have affinity. He does not in communication with, he does not have affinity for, and he is not in agreement with himself either. There is your neurological levels and so on. Illnesses. You'll run into somebody who detested himself. Same thing. I want to give you here a little bit of a physiological description of each one of these individuals. You understand this description is more generalized than this chart is. These are just things that you can glance at suddenly. You can tell. And I'm going to start at the bottom. A 0.1 is something that you won't find walking around in a society. A 0.1 will be pretty gray of the face, the skin circulation almost absent. Hardly perceptible. This person is pretty bad off. This would have to be a stretcher case. But just above that, at 0.5, the same skin condition obtains. There is a slight grayness to the skin, particularly in the cheeks, and so on. It's greater or lesser degree. Not always present, not always detectable, but it when it is detected, there's a 05. The fear and hopelessness and so forth actually mixes up to make the blood tend to leave the surface. The blood is even afraid to be on the surface. The blood goes in. The blood lakes in the center of the body to some degree. Sharp noise, the blood lakes immediately in the center of the body. It falls away from the skin. This obtains particularly at 1-1, the skin condition. It is even worse at 1-1 than it is at 0-5, the gray skin tinge. Now, the 1-1, of course, is pretended dead. You won't be troubled with a 1-1. Pardon me, a 0-1 is pretended death. You won't be troubled with it. But you'll find 0-5s around. Now, one of the things that marks a 0-5 particularly, medical range here, is it says chronic malfunction of organs. This body is trying to die. You take a young girl who is a 0-5, her endocrine system will be so bad off that the fatty tissue of her body is all displaced. Her body isn't pretty. It's displaced. The ankles and so forth are fast on the wrong places. That's all. You don't have an endocrine system that is working smoothly and even. That's all. You take a fellow at 0-5. You get a shoulder slump. So where he looks old, he's pretty well gone. The guy looks like the last rose of summer. He's sad. But the funny part of it is, when he's very young, he can manage to carry along all right. He can even fool you sometimes a little bit. He can merely appear to be very rather obedient. He's too quiet, though. No hilarity or anything like that. Well, one of the things this person will do is try to damp out any loud noises in their vicinity or something like that. They'd much rather go to a funeral than a movie any day. Weeps rather easily. Looks on the hopeless side of things. Untidy in dress. Now, you get up above that level into commoner levels. You get around 0.9, you're in a relatively acute fear bracket, continually acute state of fear. I mean, he's chronically up on the subject of fear. This person is afraid. Here's where you get this grayness of face and so forth. You'll find out that this person has a habit of sort of withdrawing. We'll withdraw very easily. As a matter of fact, if you were to talk to this individual and raise your voice just any at all, you'd find this individual would back up from you. Also, this individual's eyes, if you care to look at them, the pupil is always slightly dilated. A little bit bigger than it should be for the light he's standing in. And if you were to make a sudden noise, not even a very loud noise, but a sudden noise, if you watch the pupil very sharply, you will see it go. It'll flash. It'll flash out to the edge of the iris, back in fear. That's the expression of fear. As a matter of fact, if you can make a real loud noise around a 0.9, you can put them in a trance. Oddly enough, though, if you try to hypnotize a 1.0 or a 1.1, they'll just keep on making fun of you. They'll feel silly. They'll feel foolish. They'll do this and they'll do that. That's because they know they're annoying you when they do it. You try to knock somebody out into a hypnotic trance or a drug trance at that level, you really have quite a time because they're afraid. They're afraid of what will happen to them. They're so aware, they're so alert to anything that might hurt them. The exterior environment is so much in control of them, and yet they can still balance it to such a degree that they keep holding on to that balance. Here is an inability to relax. An inability to relax. You shake hands with the fella and his palm is always moist. You're dealing with somebody from 09 to 16. Palm of the hand, wet. Continually wet. This person has nervous mannerisms. Also. And this person has ulcers of the stomach. Rather easy to tell this band. Now, this person talks to you in slight non sequiturs, slight ones, almost continually. You say, well, we've got a pretty good plan here, and so forth. And he takes a look at it, and he says, our plan at Willow Run was, yes, we had a good plan. Not quite what you were saying. It's not far enough off to cause any startlement, but it's not what you were saying, definitely. You're trying to tell him about the plant, and he tells you about some other plant. Also, he tells you about a plant that's just a little bit bigger than your plant. And if he happened to discover, for instance, what pay you were making, even though you didn't tell him, he would have to tell you that he knew somebody. He wouldn't say he did. He knew somebody that made more pay than that. If you said, I'm going to, now, I want you to take over and get acquainted with this particular section of the office, because next week I've got a vacation coming up, and I'm going up to Colorado. It's a very funny thing, but, he's got a friend that's going up to Aspen, Colorado. One of the biggest hotels there. But he won't advance this in such a way that you can notice it. If you were to take umbrage at this, this continual hammer and pound of invalidation, invalidation. As a matter of fact, you don't own anything good. Somebody owns something better. Your height, strength, brains, and so forth. He's just going to put X's across the lines. But he's not ever going to do it in such a way that you're going to find out that he's doing it. It's going to be so apparently on the groove that it's very difficult to distinguish. And if you were ever to turn on this fellow and say, but I didn't say that. You didn't say what? I said I was going to Colorado. And you say somebody else is going to Colorado. What's the idea of telling me the other guy's going to Colorado? The only reason I told you I was going to Colorado was so that you could... I didn't say anything about anybody else going to Colorado. Now he's really got you. He's got you spinning. So he didn't say that. But you did say that. Well, as a matter of fact, what I meant to say was... And he'll tell you something else. That's what he did say. But you didn't say that. He didn't say that. You know he didn't say that. But he said this or... And if you happen to that day be drifting down around 20, you're going to find yourself down there. If you keep this up very long, you'll first find yourself at 15, and then you may find yourself where he wants to put you, 05. A temporary 05, because after you've been doing this for a while, all you can sit down and do is sit down and weep. It's a very funny thing, but you want to look at this guy's files. Maybe he's keeping files or something like that. Just look at his files someday. The surface is so pretty, but boy, don't look behind them. He's told you they're all up to date. You go in, you check it, you can't quite tell that they're not all up to date. You're looking at a fine surface with this fellow. His physical manifestation tends to be thinness rather than obesity. Obesity starts swinging, and that doesn't mean that everybody who's thin is a 1-1. Obesity starts swinging in at about 1-3, 1-4. They start to get fat. 1-5 is pretty chunky. 1-5 is pretty chunky. 1-5s tend toward being square. And that is just one of these rules of thumb that you can't take too seriously, but it's something to alert to. They have a tendency to be squarely built. That doesn't mean that everybody who is of athletic build is a 1-5. they tend to be a little bit too squarely built. You will sometimes see a 1-5 with a gray, very gray complexion. But this is a 1-5 who has only recently been beaten down below the line and who's still holding on to it somewhat, but hard to do. Your 1-5 will come in and tell you about the office. You ask them about offices. You're not going to get any covert level of activity here. I mean, this guy's going to tell you right out and out that this office furniture you've got's pretty damn bad, isn't it? Yeah, he's going to tell you all about how awful it is. Hate, destruction, he tries to destroy with words and so forth. But education may have smoothed him out to a point where he doesn't talk outrightly so. Watch what he does with things. As you come on up the line, you start to get up into the average, and you start to get into better and better physiological types. You start to get up into higher levels of efficiency. You can tell these people, let me tell you, that they look from that level on up healthy. One of the fastest ways of telling this tone scale, by the way, is the state of health of the individual. The state of health. The chronically ill, chronic malfunction, endocrine, neurological illnesses, depository illnesses, and severe sporadic illnesses. That is to say, fairly usually, the guy 2 or 3 times a year gets very sick. Any one of those categories is liability in employment. Any one of those categories. That includes arthritis, sinusitis, any one of these items. You can look on a person's health record pretty accurately. If you have his health record for over a couple of years, and you at least see where he's been on the tone scale for that couple of years. It doesn't explain away either when he says, well, I was wounded in the war. Now you know almost certainly that he's fixed by aberration. It's too bad, and it's heartlessly true, however. He said, I was wounded in the war, and that's why I've had sinusitis ever since. Well, he's wounded in the war and all that sort of thing, but what you want to know is he up or down on the tone scale? And that says he's down on the tone scale no matter how he got put there. Your best bet, as I said, is take a glance at his health record, and it'll give you a glance at his mental record. Right there, you can peg him on the line with a glance at his health record. This health record is pretty accurate, medical range. Now, attempt to establish affinity with him. Your effort to establish affinity with him. You will find out that from 2 down, the individual is liable to fawn upon you. Be too agreeable. Unctuous, and so forth. You don't expect a 1-5, by the way, to be angry with you. The 1-1, by the way, will bring you presents. Lots of them. No matter where he has to steal them. But you want to establish that and try to establish agreement. Find out how much agreement you can establish rapidly with this person. If you can establish rapid agreement with this person, the person's up the tone scale. Either that or he's hanging at your level. And communication is very important. You know, this is really, this ARC is of an essence in this. Try to get the answers to the questions on an application blank. If you have any difficulty getting those answers on that communication blank, this guy's going out of communication with him. He's down the tone scale. If for any reason or other he can't fill out this form the way it is, but it's a peculiar case and he has to have another form and that sort of thing, to hell. he's just out of communication. He's down below 2-0. It's just a method of... He doesn't want to communicate through this piece of mess with you. He's got to make a specialized piece of mess, or he's having difficulty. You say, how old are you? And he says, I'm 38. And you say, well, where were you born? Wichita. You were born in Wichita. No, that's where I live. I live in Wichita. Oh, brother, wipe him out. Quick. Because he is nervous in your presence. That's true. He's very nervous in your presence. That's a symptom, too. You want a guy to come in and talk to you. If he's nervous in your presence, he'll be nervous in the presence of the machine, too. I know that that's awfully rough, and that's a bad indoctrination and so forth. Sure, a guy can shake a little bit in a strange place or something like that, but if this bird is so nervous that he isn't getting along, he can't communicate well with you. He's just communicating at his own level on the tone scale. It isn't any super special deal. Matter of fact, some guy will be a little bit nervous with you, and he'll still keep right on communicating. Quite important. Now, the reason you look up application blanks actually is because you really do use some of this, whether you call it that or not. You want to find out where this guy has been employed. Well, the reason you look up this application blank, the reason you look it up, is to find out where he's been employed. That isn't, and what his employer's got to say, that's what you want to know. Well, with what his employer's got to say, that's taken probably some one's opinion on another, on a 2-0 or something of the sort. That data is no good, but this data is good. He wasn't employed there the same length of time that he said he was. That's important, because that spots him for you. That doesn't say, well, this fellow lies, and I guess most anybody lies this way. A fellow who starts to disarrange data, which it isn't even necessary to disarrange, boy, that's a red flag. Here's a 1-5. That's about where it starts getting disarranged badly. A 1-5 will turn facts right straight around. He'll tell you he drove a truck there. As a matter of fact, he was a file clerk there. He didn't work there between 1943 and 44. He worked there between 1939 and 1941. He hasn't got any reason to vary this. There are no reasons to vary this from 2-0 down. No reasons to vary it. Necessary. It just gets varied. There's a problem that police have about criminals, by the way. It's not that all are criminals in their real reactions. I mean, their surface reactions below 2-0. But the police have an awful problem with criminals. The cops always expect the criminal to do the survival thing, and the criminal never does. The cops go threshing around Chicago, finding this guy who just broke out and shot a guard. He said he'd never be taken alive, and he had the guard's riot gun. And they find him sitting on a streetcar reading a Bible, and he says his name is something else. What more did they expect? That was non-sequitur and non-survival as far as this guy was concerned, and yet that's the way they found him. He had reversed anything that they expected. There was no constancy in the matter. The cop always expects the criminal. He gives the criminal a chance, by the way. He'll give a criminal a chance to turn state's evidence. We'll save you your trip to the death house if you'll turn state's evidence on your pals. And the guy won't. And they figure out, well, this damn fool, he's really loopy. Why? As a matter of fact, sometimes it even works this way. You say to the guy, if you turn state's evidence, you know, we'll electrocute you. And he'll turn state's evidence the next day. I mean, he's doing the non-survival thing. The cop keeps trying to police people on the theory that they're rational, and they don't do the rational thing. The murderer always leaves a clue on the scene of the crime. He'll always go down and carefully register the gun in some other town or something of the sort with the number and so on, and then leave the gun on the scene of the crime. It isn't very hard to trace criminals because they always tell you what happens. That's the only reason cops, being the IQ cops are, succeed. A criminal is just looking for a way to get himself in trouble. And then the cops go around and they're very puzzled as to why it is criminals are so dumb in their commission of crimes. And they can't figure this out. All they're doing is running a free boarding house for people to fail. The criminals are repeaters because they repeat. The cop says, now we're going to treat you nice and we're going to take care of you. And that is to say, we're not out for you. You've done your time in the big house and here you are and you're a nice guy and you're here in town. You keep your nose clean. You get a good job and it's hands off as far as we're concerned. We give you every boost in the world. And they pick him up the next day in a stolen car. How do they pick him up in a stolen car? It's because he drives in front of a police car and kills his engine and lets the police car run into him. It's wonderful. And these cops, these great criminologists, J. Edgar and the rest of my pals, old J. Edgar, they think they're doing such a tremendously brilliant and clever things. Of course, they do very brilliant things. But these criminals are all set to be picked up. They have a rule in the city of New York. The person who finds the body killed it. It works 80% of the time. The person who finds the body killed it. This guy will come around and make sure he's on the scene of the crime, all ready to go. Clip him on, boys. 80%. If you want a real commentary on the efficiency of police, by the way, in the United States, 30% of the murders, only 30% of the murders committed are detected by police. Only 3% of those detected are brought to trial. Only 0.5% are ever executed for the crime. I thought I would let that data out. J. Edgar was trying to suppress it to a bunch of us writers a few years ago. Here's the criminal along that level. Now, that's the kind of operation that you will get below 2-0. Don't think 2-0 is necessarily an outright criminal. 1-5 is outright criminal or anything like that. The criminality is a sort of a special strain. Criminality is something that is against the law. The law of being decent men is the only law that people are against from 2-0 down. Now, there's another method of arriving at this, but let me finish off this one. You feel affinity for somebody. You go into communication with him rather easily. There's always the third one. Are you and he compatible in what you agree upon? You want to watch that one. Because two of them can slightly and apparently exist, and the third one will be almost absent. If it is, the other two are too weak to take any chance on. Doesn't that you want slavish agreement either? You find that it doesn't have to be slavish in order to get into agreement with somebody. If you get in agreement with somebody, you'll get in agreement with somebody. That's that. Now, another thing is the amount of fault a person finds and the amount of turbulence. This thing I drew you here is actually a graph of turbulence. Life energy is more and more turbulent the lower it is on the tone scale. Turbulence. An apathy case creates the maximum turbulence. They can't move. They have to be waited on hand and foot. They are completely... They really cause turbulence. They demand an enormous amount from the society. But a 1-1 causes turbulence with gossip. The 1-5 causes turbulence with rage. You see that there might be some affinity. You might be in communication with this fellow to some degree. And then he starts telling you how bad off or what you ought to do to improve the thing. And he starts telling you about... Well, if the executive vice president charges so-and-so, and yak, something wrong. Of course, you ought to do something about it, but there's something wrong. Have him shot or fire him or something, because this guy will cause you more trouble. Turbulence. Upset. Nothing's ever right around this guy. Well, believe me, nothing will ever go right around him either. The girls in his office and all the rest of the thing, they'll get pretty well knocked to pieces there. That is most chronic, this particular operation, at about 1.2 on the tone scale. Upset. Really keeps you chewed up. Can apparently be very constructive, bright, alert. Oh, yeah? That's just a method peculiar to 1.2, by the way. Now, the ARC of an individual the amount of life in its level, vibration, I hate to use those words, it sounds like spiritualism or something, actually seems to have an effect upon the material universe around him. You can tell a person's position on the tone scale by the condition of the things he owns or has care of. You look at a guy in his shoes. His shoes might not be shined, but are they not cared for to the degree that they could be? You take a pair of work shoes. The guy can even take a little bit of care of a pair of work shoes. Not to make them pretty, but to keep them serviceable. You get a carpenter on the job, something like that. Are the clothes he wears suitable to the work he is doing? And that is to say, does he keep them suitable? What's that car he's driving? Maybe it's an old car, and so forth. But does it run? Look at its fenders. Just look at a car's fenders. You can tell an awful lot about the position that guy is on the tone scale, or maybe the position of his wife. Because as the person down the scale, the physical objects in his vicinity are themselves affected by his position, so that below here, he's starting to bring breakage, carelessness, upset, wear out, and so on, to these objects in his vicinity. As you come up the scale with an individual, he might not have much, but what he has, he'll care for rather well. By the way, it's very interesting talking about that. Along about here, individuals start to accumulate wildly. They have lost so much in life that then they'll start to accumulate. But they know they haven't got any right to accumulate any real mess, so they'll accumulate nothing but junk. And they'll carry this forward to a terrific level. I mean, the junk. And you can't get them to throw anything away. You can't get them to deprive of anything. Open the guy's desk sometime when he isn't there and slam it again. That's all you need to do. You can spot him right there. Yeah. The Indians tell a story about the pack rat. The pack rat was told by the Indian god, Old Man, that he'd better get some loam. And the pack rat said, "What?" And Old Man said, "Well, you better get some loam. Next time I come back, if you don't, you know what I do to animals." Pack rat's been trying ever since. He doesn't know what it is, but he's going to have a sample of something to show him when Old Man comes back. Well, that's right there on the tone scale. The guy's afraid he's not going to have it. But what is it? Now, there's a standardized test which is being made up by the foundation. It'd take a little while to stabilize this test, get it adequately processed. It will be a relatively simple test when it's finally finished. That will be a written test which can be given and rather easily graded, which will give you the individual's position on the tone scale. As more important, really, though, than that test, is your observation of the material universe around you and the organisms in it. You should cultivate observation. Whether you're observing for the tone scale or not, you should cultivate observation anyway. That's just a good piece of advice. Before you start to accept this very widely, I would like very much for you to do a little observation. Look at the people you know. Take a look at their records in life. Look over the general situation with them. Scout around a little bit. Find out if there's any validity of this. Find out if it works to carry through. You know this guy's got arthritis. Let's look into it a little further. You don't have to be snoopy to do that. You can find out a lot about people by just listening instead of talking for a few minutes.